The following exhortation is taken from the verses in Habakkuk 3:1-9 by John Owen. A prayer of Habakkuk, the prophet upon Shigionoth. O Lord, I have heard your speech and was afraid. O Lord, revive your work in the midst of the years, in the midst of the years make known in wrath, remember mercy. God came from Teman and the Holy One from Mount Paran. Selah. His glory covered the heavens, and the earth was full of his praise. And his brightness was as a light. He had horns coming out of his hand, and there was a hiding of his power. Before him went the pestilence, and burning coals went forth at his feet. And so on. John Owen says, prayer is a believer's constant sure retreat in an evil time, in a time of trouble. It is a righteous man's wings, the name of the Lord, which is his strong tower. Proverbs 18:10. A Christian soldier's sure reserve in the day of battle. If all other forces be overthrown, here he will abide by it. No power under heaven can prevail upon him to give one step backward. Hence that title of Psalm 102:1, a prayer of the afflicted when he is overwhelmed. 'Tis the overwhelmed man's refuge and employment when he swoons with anguish. This fetches him to life again. So also, in Psalm 61:2-3, in our greatest distresses let neither unbelief nor self-contrivances jostle us out of this way to the rock of our salvation. Second observations, a pastor's discoveries of fearful judgments to his people must be attended with fervent prayers. That messenger has done but half his business who delivers his errand, but doesn't return an answer from prayer. He that brings God's message of threats to his people must return his people's message of entreaties to him. Some think they have fairly discharged their duty when they have revealed the will of God to man without laboring to reveal the condition and desires of men to God. He that is more frequent in the pulpit to his people than he is in his closet for his people is but a sorry watchman. Moses did not so, Exodus 32:31. Neither did Samuel so, 1 Samuel 12:23. Neither was it the guise of Jeremiah in his days in chapter 14:17. If the beginning of the prophecy be, as it is, a burden of Habakkuk, the close will be, as it is, a prayer of Habakkuk. Where there is a burden upon the people, there must be a prayer for the people. Woe to them who have denounced desolations and not poured out supplications. Such men delight in the evil which the prophet puts far from him. Jeremiah 17:16. I have not desired the woeful day, O Lord, you know. Now this prayer is upon Shigionoth, that is, it is turned to a song. That is, a song penned in meter. And how is this done so? To take the deeper impression, to be the better retained in memory, to work more upon the affections, to receive the ingredients of poetical loftiness for adorning the majesty of God with. The use of songs in the old church is an example, and for the present, their times and seasons is among the people of God, so all nations of old. Of all or any of these, being besides my present purpose, I shall not treat. Secondly, that it is upon Shigionoth. A little may be spoken. The word is once in another place and no more used in a title of a song, and that is in Psalm 7, the Shigionoth of David. And it is variously rendered. It seems to be taken from the word that means to err or wander variously, Proverbs 5:17. The word is used for delight, to stray with delight, in her love, or you shall err with delight. We have translated it, be ravished, noting affections out of order. The word then holds out a delightful wandering and variety, and this literally because those two songs in Psalm 7 and Habakkuk 3 are not tied to any one certain kind of meter, but of various verses for the more delight, which though it be not proper to them alone, yet in them the Holy Ghost would have it especially noted. But now surely the kernel of the shell is sweeter than this. Observation, God often calls his people unto songs upon Shigionoth. He keeps them under various dispensations, that so drawing out all their affections, their hearts may make the sweeter melody to him. They shall not have all honey, nor all gall, all judgment, lest they be broken, nor all mercy, lest they be proud. You answered them, O Lord our God. You were a God that forgave them, though you took vengeance upon their inventions. Here is a song upon Shigionoth. They are heard in their prayers and forgiven. There is the sweetest of mercies. Vengeance is taken of their inventions. There is a note of judgment. By terrible things and righteousness will you answer us, O God of our salvation. To be answered in righteousness, what sweeter mercy in the world? Nothing more refreshes a panting soul than an answer of its desires. But to have this answer by terrible things, that string strikes a humbling, a mournful note. Israel hears of deliverance by Moses, and at the same time has their bondage doubled by Pharaoh. Is it not so in our days? Precious mercies and dreadful judgments jointly poured out upon the land. We are clothed by our father like Joseph by his in a partly colored coat. Genesis 37:3. Here a piece of unexpected deliverance, and there a piece of deserved correction. At the same hour, we may rejoice at the conquest of our enemies and mourn at the close of our harvest. Victories for his own namesake and showers for our sin's sake, both from the same hand at the same time. The cry of every soul is like the cry of the multitude of old and young at the laying the foundation of the second temple. Many shouted aloud for joy, and many wept with a loud voice, so that it was a mixed noise, and the several noises could not be distinguished. Ezra 3:12-13. Having passed the title, let us look a little on those parts of the prayer itself that follow. Verse 2. The beginning of it in verse 2 has two parts. The frame of the prophet's spirit and his address to God. O Jehovah, I have heard your speech and was afraid. Secondly, his request, and this his condition. O Lord, revive your work in the midst of the years, and in the midst of the years make known in wrath, remember mercy. In the first you have, particularly his frame, he was afraid or trembled, which he wonderfully sets out in verse 16. When I heard, my belly trembled, my lips quivered at the voice, rottenness entered into my bones, and I trembled in myself. Number two, the cause of this fear and trembling, he heard the speech of God. If you will ask what speech or report this was that made the prophet himself so exceedingly quake and tremble, my answer is particularly that which you have in chapter 1:5-11, containing a dreadful denunciation of the judgments of God against the people of Israel, to be executed by the proud, cruel, insulting Chaldeans. This voice, this report of God, makes a prophet tremble. Observation. An appearance of God in anger and threats against the people should make his choicest secret ones among them to fear, to quake, and to tremble. Trembling of a man's heart must answer the shaking of God's hand. At the delivery of the law with all its attending threats, so terrible was the sight that Moses himself, though a mediator then, did exceedingly fear and quake. Hebrews 12:21. God will be acknowledged in all his goings. If men will not bow before him, he will brave them. They who fear not his threatening shall feel his inflictings. If his word be esteemed light, his hand will be found heavy. For in point of deserving, who can say, I have purged my heart? I am clean from sin. None ought to be fearless unless they be senseless. God's people are so far from being always clear of procuring national judgments that sometimes judgments have come upon nations for the sins of some of God's people amongst them, as a plague in the days of David. And in point of suffering, who knows but they may have a deep share. The prophet's book is written within as well as without, with lamentation, mourning, and woe. Ezekiel 2:10. If the lion roars, who can but fear? Amos 3:8. Fear to the rooting out of security, not the shaking of faith. fear to the pulling down of carnal precedents, not Christian confidence. Fear to draw out our souls in prayer, not to swallow them up in despair. Fear to break the arm of flesh, but not to weaken the staff of the promise. Fear that we may draw near to God with reverence, not to run from Him with diffidence. In a word, to overthrow faithless presumption and to increase gracious submission. Here is the prophet's request, and this is two things. The reviving of God's work, the remembering of mercy, and secondly, the season he desires it in the midst of the years. For the first, that which in the beginning of the verse he calls God's work, in the close of it he terms mercy, and in the reviving of his work is interpreted to be a remembering mercy. These two expressions enter parallel. The reviving of God's work towards his people is a reacting of mercy, a bringing forth of fruits of it, and that in the midst of the execution of wrath, as a man in the midst of another, remembering a business of more importance, instantly turns away and applies himself to it. Observation. Acts of mercy are God's proper work towards his people, which he will certainly awake and keep alive in the saddest times. Mercy, you see, is his work, his proper work, as he calls judgment a strange act, Isaiah 28:21. He retains not his anger forever because he delights in mercy, Micah 7:18. This is his proper work. Though it seem to sleep, he will awake it. Though it seem to die, he will revive it. Can a woman forget her sucking child that she should not have compassion on the son of her womb? Yea, they may forget, but I will not forget you. Behold, I have driven you upon the palms of my hands. Your walls are continually before me. Number two, for the season of this work, he prays that it may be accomplished in the midst of the years, upon which you may see what weight he lays by his repetition of it in the same verse. It is something doubtful what may be the peculiar sense of these words, whether the midst of the years do not denote the whole time of the people's bondage under the Chaldeans, whence Junius renders a word, noting this manner of expression, the midst of the years, for a Hebraism, during which space he intercedes for mercy for them, or whether the midst of the years denotes some certain point of time as the season of their return from captivity, about the midst of the years between their first king and the coming of the Messiah, putting a period to their church and state, whether of these is more probable is not needful to insist upon. This is certain that a certain time is pointed at which will yield us. Observation, the church's mercies and deliverance have their appointed season. In the midst of the years that shall be accomplished, as there is a decree bringing forth a wicked's destruction, Zephaniah 2, verses 1 and 2. So if there is a decree that goes forth in its appointed season for the church's deliverance, which cannot be gainsaid, Daniel 9:23. Every vision is for its appointed season and time. Habakkuk 2:3. Then it will surely come, it will not tarry. There is a determination upon the weeks and days of the church's sufferings and expectations. Daniel 9:24. 70 weeks are determined upon your people. As there are 3 transgressions and 4 of rebels for which God will not turn away their punishment. Amos 1:3. So 3 afflictions and 4 are the people of God, after which he will not shut out their supplications. Hence that confidence of the prophet in Psalm 102:13 and 14. You shall arise and have mercy upon Zion, for, he says, the time to favor her, yea, the set time is come. There is a time, yea, a set time for favor to be showed to Zion. As a time to break down, so a time to build up. An acceptable time, a day of salvation. It came to pass at the end of 430 years, even the selfsame day it came to pass, that all the hosts of the Lord went out of Egypt. Exodus 12:41. As a woman with child goes not beyond her appointed months, but is pained to be delivered, no more can the fruitful decree cease from bringing forth the church's deliverance in its season. because there is an appointed period of the church's humiliation and bearing of her iniquities. Israel shall bear their iniquities in the wilderness. But this is exactly limited to the space of 40 years. When their iniquity is pardoned, their warfare is accomplished. Isaiah 40, verse 2. They say, some men will give poison that shall work insensibly and kill at 7 years' end. The great physician of his church knows how to give his sin-sick people potions that shall work by degrees, and at such an appointed season take away all their iniquity. Then they can no longer be detained in trouble. God will not continue his course of physic to them one day beyond health recovered. This is all the fruit of their afflictions to take away their iniquities. Isaiah 27, verse 9. And when that is done, who shall keep bound what God will loose? When sin is taken away from within, trouble must depart from without. Number two, because the church's sorrows are commensurate to and do contemporize with the joys and prosperity of God's enemies and hers. Now, wicked men's prosperity has assured bounds. The wickedness of the wicked shall come to an end. There is a time when the iniquity of the Amorites comes to the full. Genesis 15, verse 16. It comes up to the brim in the appointed day of their slaughter. When their wickedness is filled to ephah, a talent of lead is laid open, the mouth thereof, and it is carried away on wings. Zechariah 5. 6-8. Swiftly, certainly, irrecoverably. If then the church's troubles contemporize, rise and fall with their prosperity and her deliverance with their destruction. If to fall of Babylon be the rise of Zion. If they be the buckets which must go down when the church comes up. If they be the rod of the church's chastisement. Their ruin being set and appointed, so also must be the church's mercies. Application. In every distress, learn to wait with patience for this appointed time. He that believes will not make haste. Though it tarry, wait for it, it will surely come. He that is infinitely good has appointed a time, and therefore it is the best time. He that is infinitely wise has determined the season, and therefore it is most suitable. He who is infinitely powerful has set it down, and therefore it shall be accomplished. Wait for it believing. Wait for it praying. Wait for it contending. Waiting is not a lazy hope, a sluggish expectation. When Daniel knew the time was come, he prayed the more earnestly. Daniel 9, 2 and 3. You will say, perhaps, what need he pray for it when he knew the time was accomplished? I answer, the more need. Prayer helps the promise to bring forth. Because a woman's time has come, therefore shall she have no midwife? Nay, therefore give her one. He that appointed their return appointed that it should be a fruit of prayer. Wait, contending also in all ways in which you shall be called out, and be not discouraged that you know not the direct season of deliverance. In the morning sow your seed, and in the evening withhold not your hand. For you know not whether you shall prosper, either this or in that, or whether they shall both be alike good. Ecclesiastes 11:6. But let us proceed to the prophet's prayer. From verses 3 to 17, he lays down several arguments taken from the majesty, power, providence, and former works of God for the supporting of his faith, to the obtaining of those good things and works of mercy which he was now praying for. We shall look on them as they lie in our way. Verse 3. God came from Teman, the Holy One, from Mount Paran, Selah. His glory covered the heavens, the earth was full of his praise. Teman was the city of the Edomites, whose land the people of Israel compassed in the wilderness. When they were stung with fiery serpents and healed with looking on a brazen serpent, set up to be a type of Christ. Teman is put up for the whole land of Edom, and the prophet makes mention of it for the great deliverance and mercy granted there to the people when they were almost consumed. That's God's coming from Teman. See Numbers 21:5-9. When they were destroyed by fiery serpents, he heals them by a type of Christ, giving them corporal and raising them to a faith of spiritual salvation. Paran, the next place mentioned, was a mountain in the land of Ishmael, near which Moses repeated the law, and from there God carried the people immediately to Canaan, another imminent act of mercy. Unto these he adds the word Selah, as it is a song, a note of elevation and singing, as it respects the matter, not the form, a note of admiration and special observation. Selah, or consider them well, for they were great works indeed. Special mercies must have special observation. Now, by reason of these actions, the prophet affirms that the glory of God covered the heavens, and the earth was full of his praise. Lofty expressions of the advancement of God's glory and the fullness of his praise amongst his people of the earth, which attended that merciful deliverance and gracious assistance. Nothing is higher or greater than that which covers heaven and fills the earth. God's glory is exceedingly exalted, and his praise increased everywhere by acts of favor and kindness to his people. That which I shall choose from amongst many others that present themselves a little to insist upon is that, observation, former mercies with their times and places are to be had in thankful remembrance to them who wait for future blessings. Faith is to this end separated by them. Awake, awake, put on strength, O arm of the Lord. Awake as in the ancient days and the generations of old. Are you not it that has cut Rahab and wounded the dragon? Are you not it which has dried the sea, the waters of the great deep, that has made the depths of the sea a way for the ransom to pass over? Isaiah 51:9-10. The breaking of Rahab, that is Egypt, so called here, and Psalm 87:4, 89:10, for her great strength, which the word signifies, and the wounding of the dragon, that great and crooked afflictor, Pharaoh is remembered and urged for a motive to a new needed deliverance. So Psalm 74:13-14, you break the heads of Leviathan in pieces and gave him to be meat to the people inhabiting the wilderness. Leviathan, the same dragon oppressing, persecuting Pharaoh, you break his heads, his councils, armies, power, and gave him for meat, that the people for 40 years together might be fed, sustained, and nourished with that wonderful mercy. Out of the eater came forth meat, out of the strong came forth sweetness. In this reciprocation, God walks with his people. Of free grace he bestows mercies and blessings on them. By grace works the returns of remembrance and thankfulness to himself for them, then showers it down again in new mercies. The countries which send up no vapors receive down no showers. Remembrance with thankfulness of former mercies is a matter, as it were, which by God's goodness is condensed in the following blessings. For mercies have their proper end when thankfully remembered. What more powerful motive to the obtaining of new than to hold out that the old were not abused? We are encouraged to cast seed again into that ground whose last crop witnesses that it was not altogether barren. That sad spot of good Hezekiah, that he rendered not again according to the benefit done to him, is set down as the opening a door of wrath against himself, Judah, and Jerusalem, 2 Chronicles 32:25. On the other side, suitable returns are a door of hope for further mercies. Secondly, the remembrance of them strengthens faith and keeps our hands from hanging down in the time of waiting for blessings. When faith is supported, the promise is engaged in a mercy at any time more than half obtained. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, Hebrews 11:1. God, says the apostle, has delivered us from so great a death and doth deliver. Now what conclusion makes he of this experience, in whom we trust that he will yet deliver us, 2 Chronicles 1:10. It was a particular mercy with the circumstances, as you may see, verse 9, which he made the bottom of his dependence. and the favors of men, we cannot do so. They may be weary of helping or be drawn dry and grow helpless. Ponds may be exhausted, but the ocean never. The infinite fountains of the deity cannot be sunk one hair's breadth by everlasting flowing blessings. Now, circumstances of actions, time, place, and the like, oftentimes make deep impressions. Mercy should be remembered with them. So does the apostle again in 2 Timothy 4:17 and 18. He delivered me from the mouth of the lion. Nero, that lion-like tyrant. And what then? He shall deliver me from every evil work. David esteemed it very good logic to argue from the victory God gave him over the lion and the bear to a confidence of victory over Goliath, 1 Samuel 17:37.